Listening comprehension. You will hear some passages of an audio guide for a walking tour in Bath called In the Footsteps of Jane Austen. For items 1 to 10, decide whether the statements are true, A, or false, B, according to the text you hear. You will hear the text twice.
Welcome to Bath, a UNESCO World Heritage Site since 1987. From Roman times to the present day, visitors have been drawn to this beautiful city. Amongst Bath's famous visitors was Jane Austen, who made it her home for 6 years. Two of her novels, Northanger Abbey and Persuasion, are mostly set in Bath. She describes life in the city in her letters and novels, capturing the importance of being part of the social scene here. In Northanger Abbey, she writes,
"They arrived in Bath. Catherine was all eager delight. Her eyes were here, there, everywhere, as they approached its fine and striking environs, and afterwards drove through those streets which conducted them to the hotel. She was come to be happy, and she felt happy already."
The official Bath guide of 1800 boasts,
"It has become one of the most agreeable, as well as most polite places in the kingdom, owing chiefly to the elegant neatness of its buildings, and the accommodations for strangers, which are superior to those of any city in Europe."
The gentry, the wealthy, and the hangers-on all came here. But Bath exists because of its natural hot spring waters. These waters gush out of the earth at a constant rate of 250,000 gallons, or 1,000,000 litres, a day, and at a constant temperature of 46.5 degrees centigrade, or 120 degrees Fahrenheit, a phenomenon unique in Britain. The Celts first discovered the hot springs, and they dedicated the water to their goddess Sulis. Then the Romans arrived in 44 AD and created a sophisticated series of baths surrounded by a small town which they called Aquae Sulis. After 300 years, they deserted the baths, which fell into disrepair. They were later restored in the late 1800s and are now open to visitors. The entrance to the Roman baths, marked on your map, is in the Abbey churchyard. In the Middle Ages, a small town grew up around a monastery which provided hospitality for people coming here to take the waters for their health. Central to the monastery was the beautiful Abbey, which is the third church on this site, dating from 1499. Look up at its highly decorated facade, which tells the story of a dream in which angels, on the ladders at each side, go up and down to heaven. You can tell which ones are coming down, as they are descending head first. After 1702, Bath would never be the same again. Queen Anne came here to take the waters, and after her visit, the little town flourished and grew all through the 18th century. Three men were mainly responsible for its creation. They were Beau Nash, who became master of ceremonies and took charge of the social scene; John Wood, architect and creator of some of Bath's most beautiful buildings; and Ralph Allen, who became mayor, and decreed that all the buildings were to be made of Bath stone, which came from the local quarry, which he happened to own. You can see this stone as you look around you. You can also see the pump room, which is marked on the map. This elegant room, where the spa water can be sampled from the 18th century pump, was pivotal to life in Bath in Jane Austen's time. This is from Northanger Abbey.
They set off in good time for the pump room, where the ordinary course of events took place. Mr. Allen, after drinking his glass of water, joined some gentlemen to talk over the politics of the day and compare the accounts of their newspapers, and the ladies walked about together, noticing every new face and almost every new bonnet in the room.
If you attended the pump room, your name was listed in a visitor's book, and socially you had arrived. Today it's open for refreshments, and you can still sample a glass of the spa water. To continue the tour, stand with your back to the abbey, walk straight on and underneath the colonnades. Turn left and take the first right into Bath Street.
Now listen to the text again.
Welcome to Bath, a UNESCO World Heritage Site since 1987. From Roman times to the present day, visitors have been drawn to this beautiful city. Amongst Bath's famous visitors was Jane Austen, who made it her home for 6 years. Two of her novels, Northanger Abbey and Persuasion, are mostly set in Bath. She describes life in the city in her letters and novels, capturing the importance of being part of the social scene here. In Northanger Abbey, she writes,
"They arrived in Bath. Catherine was all eager delight. Her eyes were here, there, everywhere, as they approached its fine and striking environs, and afterwards drove through those streets which conducted them to the hotel. She was come to be happy, and she felt happy already."
The official Bath guide of 1800 boasts,
"It has become one of the most agreeable, as well as most polite places in the kingdom, owing chiefly to the elegant neatness of its buildings, and the accommodations for strangers, which are superior to those of any city in Europe."
The gentry, the wealthy, and the hangers-on all came here. But Bath exists because of its natural hot spring waters. These waters gush out of the earth at a constant rate of 250,000 gallons, or 1,000,000 litres, a day, and at a constant temperature of 46.5 degrees centigrade, or 120 degrees Fahrenheit, a phenomenon unique in Britain. The Celts first discovered the hot springs, and they dedicated the water to their goddess Sulis. Then the Romans arrived in 44 AD and created a sophisticated series of baths surrounded by a small town which they called Aquae Sulis. After 300 years, they deserted the baths, which fell into disrepair. They were later restored in the late 1800s and are now open to visitors. The entrance to the Roman baths, marked on your map, is in the Abbey churchyard. In the Middle Ages, a small town grew up around a monastery which provided hospitality for people coming here to take the waters for their health. Central to the monastery was the beautiful Abbey, which is the third church on this site, dating from 1499. Look up at its highly decorated facade, which tells the story of a dream in which angels, on the ladders at each side, go up and down to heaven. You can tell which ones are coming down, as they are descending head first. After 1702, Bath would never be the same again. Quote, Queen Anne came here to take the waters. And after her visit, the little town flourished and grew all through the 18th century. Three men were mainly responsible for its creation. They were Beau Nash, who became master of ceremonies and took charge of the social scene, John Wood, architect and creator of some of Bath's most beautiful buildings, and Ralph Allen, who became mayor, and decreed that all the buildings were to be made of Bath stone, which came from the local quarry, which he happened to own. You can see this stone as you look around you. You can also see the pump room, which is marked on the map. This elegant room, where the spa water can be sampled from the 18th century pump, was pivotal to life in Bath in Jane Austen's time. This is from Northanger Abbey.
They set off in good time for the pump room, where the ordinary course of events took place. Mr. Allen, after drinking his glass of water, joined some gentlemen to talk over the politics of the day and compare the accounts of their newspapers, and the ladies walked about together, noticing every new face and almost every new bonnet in the room.
If you attended the pump room, your name was listed in a visitor's book, and socially you had arrived. Today it's open for refreshments, and you can still sample a glass of the spa water. To continue the tour, stand with your back to the abbey, walk straight on and underneath the colonnades. Turn left and take the first right into Bath Street.
You have 30 seconds to finish the task. For items 11 to 15, listen to another passage and choose an option from A, B, or C. You will hear the text twice.
You should now be standing outside the assembly rooms, designed by John Wood the Younger, which served as a gathering place for high society living in this part of town. The assembly rooms, previously known as the upper rooms, were the scene of evening gatherings for dancing, gambling, card playing and refreshment, which would have started around 6 p.m. and finished strictly at 11 p.m. This timing had been set by Bath's original and famous master of ceremonies, Beau Nash. It is referred to often in Jane Austen. "Have you yet honoured the upper rooms?" asks the dashing Henry Tilney of Catherine in Northanger Abbey.
"Yes, sir. I was there last Monday," she replies.
Jane Austen herself went there many times, and writes in a letter to her sister Cassandra,
"I dressed myself as well I could, and had all my finery much admired at home. Before tea was a rather dull affair, but after tea we cheered up."
Tea, newly introduced as a fashionable and expensive drink, was the main refreshment taken during this period. Jane's mother also gives an interesting glimpse when she writes,
"The ball on Monday was not a very full one, not more than 1,000.
Rebuilt after bomb damage in World War II, the three elegant Georgian rooms which make up the assembly rooms have many uses today, including as a concert venue during Bath's music festival and a location for wedding parties. In the basement is the Museum of Costume, displaying not only the latest fashions with the dress of the year, but also historic fashion, including examples of silks and muslins like those described by Jane Austen. The museum is open to visitors. In Persuasion, Sir Walter Elliot lived in this part of town, renting a very good house in Camden Place, a lofty, dignified situation, such as becomes a man of consequence.
Now listen to the text again.
You should now be standing outside the assembly rooms, designed by John Wood the Younger, which served as a gathering place for high society living in this part of town. The assembly rooms, previously known as the upper rooms, were the scene of evening gatherings for dancing, gambling, card playing and refreshment, which would have started around 6 p.m. and finished strictly at 11 p.m. This timing had been set by Bath's original and famous master of ceremonies, Beau Nash. It is referred to often in Jane Austen. "Have you yet honoured the upper rooms?" asks the dashing Henry Tilney of Catherine in Northanger Abbey.
"Yes, sir. I was there last Monday," she replies.
Jane Austen herself went there many times and writes in a letter to her sister Cassandra,
"I dressed myself as well I could and had all my finery much admired at home. Before tea was a rather dull affair, but after tea we cheered up."
Tea, newly introduced as a fashionable and expensive drink, was the main refreshment taken during this period. Jane's mother also gives an interesting glimpse when she writes,
"The ball on Monday was not a very full one, not more than 1,000.
Rebuilt after bomb damage in World War II, the three elegant Georgian rooms which make up the assembly rooms have many uses today, including as a concert venue during Bath's music festival and a location for wedding parties. In the basement is the Museum of Costume, displaying not only the latest fashions with the dress of the year, but also historic fashion, including examples of silks and muslins like those described by Jane Austen. The museum is open to visitors. In Persuasion, Sir Walter Elliot lived in this part of town, renting a very good house in Camden Place, a lofty, dignified situation, such as becomes a man of consequence.
You have 30 seconds to finish the task and transfer your answers to the answer sheet. Integrated task. Read the text on the ability of apes to acquire language and then listen to a part of the lecture on the same topic. You will notice that some ideas coincide and some differ in them. Answer questions 16 to 25 by choosing A if the idea is expressed in both materials. B, if it can be found only in the audio recording. C, if it can be found only in the reading text. And D, if neither of the materials expresses the idea. Now you have 7 minutes to read the text and then to look through the statements 16 to 25. Now listen to a part of the lecture on the same topic. You will hear the text twice.
Some scientists claim that apes, like humans, also use languages. There are many studies into ape acquisition of language, some famous, such as the Coco studies. But are these animals really acquiring language? We really haven't done enough research to address the question of how and when humans started using language, but we can compare human and ape communicative abilities to determine whether the claims about ape language are valid. First, for behavior to be called language, it must be communicative. In other words, the signers must be able to use language creatively. They should be able to take turns in conversation, must sign spontaneously rather than as a response to drilling or coercion, and must be able to comment on interesting phenomena. If you think about what the apes have accomplished in communicating, these criteria have not been met. However, according to the proponents of ape communication, the animals do meet these criteria. They maintain that those of us who question the validity of this research have never worked with apes. However, we wonder how much influence their probable emotional attachment to an animal has on the conclusions they reach. Is there a solution in sight that would put an end to this controversy? Yes, there might be. Studies are being undertaken at the neurophysiological level. Through the use of modern brain scanning techniques, such as MRI, we may be able to get a better picture of the brain activity of a healthy human during communication and an ape while supposedly communicating. A comparison of these scans should give us an insight into whether apes really do communicate.
You will hear the text again in 45 seconds. Now listen to the text again.
Some scientists claim that apes, like humans, also use languages. There are many studies into ape acquisition of language, some famous, such as the Coco studies. But are these animals really acquiring language? We really haven't done enough research to address the question of how and when humans started using language. But we can compare human and ape communicative abilities to determine whether the claims about ape language are valid. First, for behavior to be called language, it must be communicative. In other words, the signers must be able to use language creatively. They should be able to take turns in conversation, must sign spontaneously rather than as a response to drilling or coercion, and must be able to comment on interesting phenomena. If you think about what the apes have accomplished in communicating, these criteria have not been met. However, according to the proponents of ape communication, the animals do meet these criteria. They maintain that those of us who question the validity of this research have never worked with apes. However, we wonder how much influence their probable emotional attachment to an animal has on the conclusions they reach. Is there a solution in sight that would put an end to this controversy? Yes, there might be. Studies are being undertaken at the neurophysiological level. Through the use of modern brain scanning techniques, such as MRI, we may be able to get a better picture of the brain activity of a healthy human during communication and an ape while supposedly communicating. A comparison of these scans should give us an insight into whether apes really do communicate.
Now you have 5 minutes to finish the task and transfer your answers to the answer sheet.
This is the end of the integrated part. Turn to the reading section of the test.